Good afternoon, everyone. Members online, just do be aware that your microphones may be live as we are now on the record. I'd like to call this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order. The time is now 1:36 p.m. We're in Belt's Room 105 of the Thomas Stewart Building in the nation's most beautiful capital city, Juneau, Alaska. Today is Monday, April 28th, 2025. Members present are Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Dunbar, and myself, Senator Bjorkman. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Welcome, everyone, to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please turn off or silence your cell phones. I would like to extend an especially warm Senate Labor and Commerce welcome to our recording secretary, Carrie Tupo, and our LAO moderator, Marnie Provost. We have four bills on our agenda today. First up is Senate Bill 156, Alaska Commercial Fishing and Agricultural Bank Loans. Next, Senate Bill 49, Workplace Violence Protective Orders. Following that will be Senate Bill 103, CNA Training. And last up will be Senate Bill 170, Gaming Electronic Pull Tabs. First up, Senate Bill 156, Alaska Commercial Fishing and Ag Bank Loans. This is our second hearing on this item. During the first hearing on April 14th, we had a presentation of the bill and took invited testimony. Today, it is my intention to take further testimony, consider a draft committee substitutes that is in members' packets, and look to the will of the committee. With us today for a brief recap of the bill, we have the Honorable Senator Jesse Keel and his staff, Ella Atkinson. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please put yourselves on the record and begin your brief recap.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. I appreciate your willingness to accommodate my schedule conflict with finance. Senate Bill 156 will help the Commercial Fishing Agriculture Bank, CFAB, to survive an unusual and very time-limited temporary period during which Alaska's Commercial Fisheries Revolving Loan Fund is helping out Alaska's small family commercial fishing businesses by loaning at below market rates. During this time, a small investment directly in CFAB under the terms of this bill will let CFAB match those rates, and it will make sure that they have the doors open and the lights on when rates go back to normal, and fishing families will continue to have this important financing option as they weather unusual times in the markets and unusual times with Alaska's fish runs. So, Mr. Chairman, that in brief is what the bill does. Happy to answer questions or go into as much detail as the committee needs.
Thank you very much, Senator Keel. Are there any questions from committee members? Also online available for questions are from CFAB Sharon Lechner, from the Division of Banking and Securities Tracy Reno, as well as Rob Schmidt and Don Hanisch. Any questions from members? Seeing and hearing none, at this time I'll open public testimony on Senate Bill 156. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify? Is there anyone online who wishes to testify to this item? Seeing and hearing none, at this time I will close public testimony. Members have a draft proposed CS in their packets, which has been submitted by the bill sponsor. May I have a motion, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 156, version 3-4, liver salmon 0857, /nickel, as the working document. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'll object for purposes of discussion. Ms. Atkinson, could you please run us through the changes?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. Thank you. For the record, Ella Atkinson, staff to Senator Keel. The changes in the CS are that it states explicitly that the loans using the state funding will be a fixed interest rate. The original language mirrored commercial revolving loan fund, commercial fishing revolving loan fund, but this just makes that explicit. There are also some changes to the loan comparison numbers that CFAB will provide to the Division of Bank and Securities. That language was worked upon by the Division of Bank and Securities and CFAB. And then it also clarifies that Bank and Securities will be doing a one-time review and not an audit, and that state money will be returned to the state through a buyback of shares in CFAB. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from members? Hearing no questions, I'll remove my objection. Is there further objection to this committee substitute? Hearing and seeing none, the committee committee substitute version N, as in Nikolai, is before the committee as a working document. Is there any committee discussion of the CS? Seeing and hearing none, what are the wishes of the committee?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move to report committee substitute for Senate Bill 156, version 34, liver salmon 0857 /nickel from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Attached zero fiscal note. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing none, the committee substitute for Senate Bill 156, version 34-LS0857 /N, as in Nikolsky, is reported from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork and set up for the next bill.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Senate Bill 49, Workplace Violence Protective Orders. This is our second hearing on this item. During our first hearing on April 23rd, we had a presentation of the bill and took invited testimony. Today, it is my intention to take any further testimony and look to the will of the committee. With us today for a brief recap of the bill, we have a bill sponsor, the Honorable Senator Matt Clayman, and his staff, Brianna Kakark. Welcome back to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please put yourself on the record and please give us a brief recap of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd note that my staff is not here. Without details, she had a higher calling this evening and is out of town. What the bill does is creates workplace violence protective orders that are patterned after the domestic violence protective orders. And the intent of the bill is to provide for businesses that are receiving or aware of real threats to the business at the business location, that they would be able to get a protective order and a procedure similar to the workplace or to the domestic violence protective orders and not having to go through a much more expensive and extended civil process. So that's the framework of the bill, and happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions from committee members? Hearing and seeing none, at this time, I will open public testimony on Senate Bill 49. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify to this item? Is there anyone online? Randy Brieger, please state your name and begin your testimony, ma'am.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I am Randy Brieger. I am the executive director of AWAKE, Youth Women's Aid in Crisis, here in Anchorage. I just wanted to call in and express my support for Senate Bill 49 to establish workplace protective orders. This legislation is vital for enhancing the safety of both of our residents that reside in our shelter and our staff. Domestic violence victims often encounter significant barriers when attempting to report crimes. These challenges are further compounded within the shelter environment. Victims residing in shelters may fear that reporting threats or incidents could compromise their confidentiality or lead to retaliation. Additionally, the communal nature of shelters means that a threat against one individual can jeopardize the safety of all residents and staff. We have had two recent examples of this type of scenario. About 2 months ago, a shelter participant's abuser began parking in our parking lot with a rifle in his truck. He called the crisis line demanding his wife come out. The police were called and the individual was asked to leave. He returned the next day with his rifle again and called the crisis line threatening to shoot staff members this time. Police were called again and he was arrested. He was released the following day and seen driving around the building again, but did not pull into our parking lot. Considering the level of threat, this could have been a situation when we applied for a protective order where that initial arrest was not made. Last month, a shelter participant's abuser tried to gain access to our facility through the secured parking lot by ramming our vehicle gate 4 times. He then drove away and was arrested shortly after for felony criminal mischief. He was released the next day, and the charges were dropped by the district attorney to leaving the scene of an accident. Likely emboldened by the lack of consequences from the criminal justice system, he was seen driving around the property again after his release. Had law enforcement been unable to find the person that night, he could have applied for that protective order. By allowing organizations like Awake to petition for workplace violence protective orders on behalf of our staff and residents, SB 49 provides an additional tool for organizations to address threats swiftly and effectively, a tool that would more accurately represent the level of threat a person is on records like CourtView. It would also enable us to take immediate action to protect our communities without placing the burden solely on individual victims who are often concerned about the increased likelihood of lethality they face by leaving and coming into shelter. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else online or in the room who would like to testify to this item? Hearing and seeing none, at this time I will close public testimony. Is there any committee discussion on this bill or further questions for the bill sponsor? Seeing and hearing none, what are the wishes of the committee?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I am moved to report committee substitute for Senate Bill 49, version 34, Larry Sugar 0186 / Indian from committee with individual recommendations and 5 attached fiscal notes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 49, version 34, Lima Sierra 0186 / I as an Indian, is reported from committee with individual recommendations and attached 5 fiscal notes. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork and set up for the next bill. Back on the record, up now, Senate Bill 103, CNA training. With us today, for a brief recap of the bill, is the bill sponsor, the Honorable Senator Elvie Gray Jackson. Senator Gray Jackson, thank you for providing a brief recap.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the committee for hearing the bill a second time regarding CNA training. Alaska's population is aging, and our certified nurse assistants, they play a critical role in offering not only physical care, but also an emotional and cognitive support. Two particular needs that this bill focuses on are making sure that our CNAs are trained in signs and symptoms of dementia and Alzheimer's, which can improve the quality of life of those individuals affected by these conditions. The second need is for person-centered care, which would give CNAs the tools needed to implement individualized protocol for the individual patient's needs. And it also involves treating patients with respect and empathy while empowering them to make informed decisions about their own health. The goal with Senate Bill 103 is to bring these two practices to Alaska as a way to support our aging population. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Senator Ray Jackson. Are there any questions for the bill sponsor? Hearing and seeing none, at this time I will open public testimony on Senate Bill 103. Is there anyone in the room or online who wishes to testify to this item? We'll go to Cindy Harris. Ms. Harris, please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Hello, my name is Cindy Harris and I live in Soldotna. As a co-founding member of the Alzheimer's Association Alaskan chapter, I am deeply committed to advocating for those affected by dementia and their caregivers. I would like to extend my sincere gratitude to Senator Ray Jackson for introducing this important bill. This proposed change is a crucial step forward. To save the legislator the time and effort, it would be appreciated if the Board of Nursing could address this through regulation at their next meeting. Thank you so much for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much, Ms. Harris. It's good to hear from you. We'll go next to Deborah Adams.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Deborah Adams, and I'm a resident of Cordova. I'm also a board member of the Alzheimer's Association, the Alaska chapter, and I became involved in the association after my husband passed away in 2017 from Alzheimer's. And I've been an advocate for research and anything that will help us to eradicate this disease or address it in its many forms. It's crucial that CNA training programs include education on the signs and symptoms of dementia, as well as person-centered care practices. And this bill provides an excellent opportunity for the Board of Nursing to incorporate these topics into regulations at their upcoming May meeting. And so I appreciate everything that you are doing. I'm pleased to see this bill is being considered and strongly support it. So thank you again for your attention to dementia issues.
Thank you very much, Ms. Adams, for your testimony. Is there anyone else online or in the room who wishes to testify to this item? Seeing and hearing none, at this time I'll close public testimony. Is there any committee discussion on this bill? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just note that I am now added as a co-sponsor of this bill, though I'm not yet listed. Also, I'll say that is the second time in a week that one of my high school teachers has appeared in public testimony. So I just want to wish my best to Mrs. Adams, who was my English teacher. Thank you, Mr. President.
Very good. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank Senator Dunbar for co-sponsoring this bill, and you are listed, so thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Hearing no further committee discussion at this time, we will set Senate Bill 103 aside for further consideration at a future meeting. We'll take a brief at ease while we set up for the next bill. We're back on the record. It's 1:58 now here in Belts Room 105. Up next, our final item of the day is Senate Bill 170, Gaming Electronic Pull Tabs. This is our second hearing on this bill. During our first hearing of the bill, members heard a presentation and a review of the sectional. Today, it is my intention to take invited testimony from stakeholders involved in charitable gaming. For a recap of the bill, we have my staff, Conrad Jackson. Mr. Jackson, please put yourself on the record and begin your recap of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Senator Bjorkman and the Labor and Commerce Committee. The bill before you, Senate Bill 170, proposes that we add electronic pull tabs to the charitable gaming statutes of the state of Alaska. In the bill, we make a number of changes in defining how really all parties involved in gaming, with the exception, I guess, of the player, shall behave. We change some of the prize payouts. We make some adjustments to how bingo games are operated and the prizes as well. We deal with investigatory powers for the department to investigate both legal and illegal gaming activities. And, Mr. Chairman, I think just to save time for the folks who are invited to testify, I'll leave it at that and go from there.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jackson. Any questions for Mr. Jackson before I'll make some comments and then we can start invited testimony? Hearing and seeing none, just to reiterate the rationale for this bill and why I've brought it forward, is this bill, I believe, is sorely needed to make sure that our nonprofit groups and charities that benefit from charitable gaming can continue to do so. They've faced rising prices and headwinds that have eaten into their ability and eroded their effectiveness at raising money from selling paper pull tabs, especially. By adopting electronic pull tabs, we are able to reinvigorate those nonprofits and charities' ability to make money for kids' sports teams and senior centers and many other folks that benefit from charitable gaming. So that's the goal in this. The goal is to create a level playing field in which everybody can have equal access to this market, as well as provide the maximum benefit for our charitable groups in the state of Alaska. With that, we will begin our list of invited testifiers for the day. First, we'll have John Powers. Mr. Powers, please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony. Mr. Powers, before you start, also I meant to mention that my office has been tracking a number of the communications we've received from many stakeholders about changes that are suggested to this latest bill, and we are kind of incorporating a list that we'll talk through at a future committee hearing as well. So we're glad to receive all the feedback, and we're going through those. So go ahead, Mr. Powers. Mr. Powers is not available. Okay. We'll come back to them. All right. Steve Borcherding.
Good afternoon. My name is Stephen Borcherding. I am currently the president of the Whaler Casino Supply, a licensed pull tab distributor here in the state of Alaska, a company that's been around for about 38 years now. Myself, I've been spent the past 36 years in Alaska's gaming industry, 15 as a distributor and 21 as the general manager of the largest gaming operation in Alaska, 100% charitable, native-owned and operated Gold Cash Bingo. During that time, I've also served on multiple legislative committees, task forces. I've also been everything you can think of in the gaming industry, from a primary member in charge to a commander or vice commander of a VFW post or American Legion post and things of that nature as well. So when I talk to you this afternoon, I'm talking to you as someone who's experienced in not only the distributor side of this, but also as an end user and the charities who benefit from this. I agree 100% with what the chairman just said about gaming in Alaska. The charities, it's getting more and more expensive to game in Alaska. It's getting harder and harder to maintain the levels of profitability that you need to continue at this pace. Costs have gone up significantly. We all know that. So I wanted to let everyone know in this room that I'm 100% for e-tabs. I think electronic pull tabs is a great answer to this. My company was the company who first brought in electronic bingo in 1994, and it saved bingo in Alaska for the most part, for most of the charities that used it. It continues to this day. It has not destroyed the market. It has not killed the paper business. It has not put anybody out of business. Electronic pull tabs has been here since 1994. And this is kind of the same type of issue that we're trying to move this forward. I was hoping to be here today to speak in favor of the electronic pull tabs bill, but unfortunately, I can't speak in favor of this particular bill. This is a bill that started out with great intentions and now has become a bill that's about 10% about e-tabs and 90% about a lot of self fulfilling things. Lots of items in here that are not really particular to e-tabs anymore. Fundamentally changes a lot of things about the gaming industry and pretty much benefits a few people, unfortunately. I think there's a lot of unseen ramifications from items in this bill that are actually going to hurt charities in the long run. And that's speaking as someone who actually has done all sides of this. I'm going to speak today, though, on the things that affect my current situation as a distributorship. Excuse me. My computer went down today. I'm going off of notes, so I apologize. Whaler Casino Supply, which is the company I work for, has been in existence for nearly four decades. 18 months from now, we hope to celebrate our 40th anniversary, 40th birthday in the state of Alaska, helping charities all that time, been through everything, every ringer, everything, people not selling to us, the whole nine yards. We've earned our stripes in this state. I say the word hopefully because if this bill passes, the Whaler Casino Supply and its 12 employees are going to be out of business. There's language in this bill that prevents the Whaler Casino Supply from being owned by a manufacturer, in this case, Arrow International, who owns us. The original rules were written for gaming in 1987, I believe, and this has always been the case, but suddenly it's become an issue because somebody finally bought the Whaler Casino Supply in this case. I just wanted to let everybody know that those 12 employees are Alaskan employees. I've been here for almost 40 years myself. We're Alaskans. Anchorage, Wasilla, Fairbanks, those are all people that work for me, and we're all going to lose our jobs if this bill passes. So I ask you all to look at that because for some reason I do not see one reason why this provision or this section of the bill has been put in there. It doesn't help anyone. It doesn't hurt anyone. And I'm sure you're going to hear some scary words like monopolies and all kinds of things like that, and that's simply not true. Arrow could have done that a long time ago, and they chose not to. Instead, they chose to invest in the state of Alaska. They chose to invest in my employees and my company, and we're actually doing quite well, and we're expanding, and we get and a lot of things. And my employees have better benefits than they did before and all that. If electronic pull tabs were to pass, they're going to invest a lot more, 20 to 30 more employees in the state of Alaska. So I ask you to keep an eye on that provision. I don't think it's necessary. I can't think of one reason why it was put in there other than to hurt the Whaler Casino Supply specifically. Two more issues that are in here, and I'll go with those two, is what's called a must-sell state. In addition, is the inability for the Whaler or anyone else to have in the future, not at the moment, but it will eventually take away our ability to make custom games, games that we've developed, over years of talking to charities, working with our charities, finding out what the trends are and things like that. This bill essentially eliminates the ability to do that. Now, there is a provision in there for a certain amount of time and so on and so forth. But a lot of these items that we've had have been decades-long items that have proven to be quite profitable for our charities and things like that. We put a lot of time and effort into those games. And to simply just take it away to make it, for lack of a better term, an even playing field seems unfair at the way that it's being presented here. Additionally, the must-sell sections of this are going to hurt the charities. And I don't have the time to go into why that would happen here. But if anyone would ever want to talk to me about that, not in this thing, or I can send something to you. Unfortunately, I think there's an unseen issue here, and I can get into the details of that at another time. I just can't do it tonight. Today, it's just too much to talk about. The must-sell is also simply saying that those of us who've been in this industry for a long time are simply just going to – we just – everything we've worked for, all the work we've done, all the relationships we've built, all the charities we've helped, everybody just gets to be the exact same now. No one has to earn it like we did. We went through COVID. We went through manufacturers that wouldn't sell to us. We went through everything you can think of, and this company is still here, and this company is still prosperous, and this company is still Alaskan. Doesn't matter who owns us. We're still Alaskans who are here. We're still Alaskans who help other Alaskans. I love the charitable gaming industry. I'm passionate about it. I've been doing it my whole life. And I see issues with this bill that are going to hurt the industry. And that makes me uncomfortable. And I don't want it to end like this, especially for my company. So I ask that the changes that you talked about, Mr. Chair, please add this to that list of those changes that might be looked at. We aren't the big bad wolf. We're nothing like everybody's made us out to be. Just a bunch of people who work here in Alaska trying to do a job, and we really enjoy what we do for a living. Arrow International is not the terrible boogeyman that everyone makes it out to be. They've actually invested a lot of money in this state. And for us to scare off a company that's invested a lot of money into this state doesn't seem to be the right answer to me. I thank you for your time. I'll take any questions if you have any. And again, I apologize. My notes were on my laptop, but I hope I got through this okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Borcherding. Any questions from committee members? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Up next is Nam Yang.
First time doing this, so I'm very, very nervous. But my name is Nam Yang. I live in Anchorage, Alaska. Been here for well over almost 20 years. I am an employee. I work under Steve at Whaler Casino Supply. I've been with Whaler for, on May 14, will be my 11th year there. Today I'm here on behalf of myself and some of my employees are what I would like to call my second family at Whaler Casino Supply. If this bill passed, and just backing up a little bit about what Steve said, there's some wording in the bills that we are in risk of losing our jobs. A majority of us employees that worked at Whaler Casino Supply has been there for more than myself, 10 years, we can't afford to lose our job. A little bit about myself, I have 6 kids, 2 dogs, 1 in high school, 2 in middle school, 2 in elementary, and 1 was in daycare, but they closed. But me losing my job is not just me that's losing out on something, it's my kids. Yeah, I could find another job. Yeah, I could do something. But Whaler is my second family. They watched, from 6 kids, they watched all of them grow into who they are today. And I can't afford that. A little bit about the second family that I, my Whaler employees. There is Charlie Yang. He is our warehouse manager. He's worked there for 9 years. And within that 9 years, he's adopted 2 girls, two daughters, one of which he saved, was born as a addict, and he's now fostering her and is in the process of adopting her. If this bill goes through and he loses his job, he risks losing that adoption. He's not, he wouldn't be able to support her, is what they say. Ron, who's what I would call a veteran to Whaler, has been there for 20 years. His wife just survived a stroke, well, not just, she had a stroke 2 years ago. And he just turned 64, and I just don't think he's ready to move on. He's been doing this for 20 years. I just don't think he's ready. He just can't afford it. With Arrow coming in and owning Whaler, we finally have health care benefits. And with the health care benefits, we also get our HSA, which is our health savings account, and a flexible savings account, including dental, vision, and all that. Everyone looks for a job that has that security. It's not just about just having a job that pays the bills. It's about being able to provide healthcare-wise and whatnot for the family. Another thing that AIR offers also is called they have a child care support thing. And what they do is they help you pay for child care, basically. My youngest one, three-year-old, she was in child care, and unfortunately they closed up that child care, but Arrow has helped me pay for half of that. Now, as we all know, child care is like through the roof expensive. It's like $1,200 a kid. And so Arrow has been able to help me with that. I wish I could be here today, like Steve said, to say we support this bill to an extent. But I don't, because we are in risk of losing our job. And losing my job means potentially losing my home. A lot. It just means a lot. And when I think about it, it scares me. And I'm going to crack up because it's scary. We all rely on Whaler, our job, to support us, our families, everyone behind us. I don't know who is behind this bill and why they will want to hurt the Whaler employees there. But I urge you to vote against the bill and protect the local company, your local Alaskans, who has been working there for more than 10 plus years. And I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Any questions from committee members? Thank you for joining us. Next up on the phone is Jerry Lewis.
Thank you for the time. My name is Jerry Lewis. I'm the owner-operator of Northern Lights Bingo and Ricky World here in Anchorage. You know, like Steve, I've been involved in this industry for all of my life, it seems like. I owned one of the larger distributorships in Alaska, which did wind up selling over to the Whaler. I've been involved with vendor relationships to an extent. I've also had the opportunity to serve in other states for several different establishments in gaming, casinos, things like that. I'm going to start by, coming out in opposition to the bill the way it's written. I believe, like everybody has said, that we need to protect charitable gaming in Alaska. It should be considered the poster child of the gaming industry in the United States. Just a couple things why I say that, and I was on a committee also on the long rewriting this, and I thought we'd come up with something we could all agree with, and the version that came out was certainly not what we agreed to. So last year, as the reports say, there were $400 million in gross receipts generated by charities or charitable gaming in Alaska. $161 million of that was generated by the operators. That's over 40% that was done simply by the operators. Just to put that into comparison on the vendor relationships, that vendor relationships generated just under 14% of the adjusted gross income, of the
of the wagers in Alaska. I want to be clear on that. The current bill as it stands would be devastating to operators, and I'll just go through a couple. I know that we're getting long, so a couple sections on it. There are several of them that I don't support. But the total amount that a manufacturer or distributor that can charge for a game, in my opinion, should not exceed what the charity can get out of that game. I like to learn by other people's mistakes. In other states, they've limited that amount to 25%. I even propose that it would be higher than that at 27%. Adding in the 3% tax for a total of 30% that the charity or that the manufacturer or distributor could charge for the game. If we allowed it the way it's written in the bill at 35%, that would double the cost of a full-time game that they're currently, a paper full-time game currently being played. In Section 36 of this bill, I believe that everybody agrees, at least they agree in the bill, that we need to limit the amount of tablets that could be allowed in a location that serves alcohol. Again, let's learn by everybody else's mistakes. Other states are limiting it. My proposal is that we limit the number of tablets allowed in a bar to 4. No limit on the number of paper games, obviously. They could continue to play as many as they want, but I don't want to see casinos break out. And I've been involved in that. I don't want to see that portion. Section 40 of this bill is all over the place. The percentages jump everywhere, but I think I understand the intent. Again, I'm going to come back to it. I would like to learn from other states' mistakes. You know, a vendor relationship in this state currently on a paper game, you have to pay for the tab before you play it. On e-tabs, you would not have to pay for that up front. E-tabs are much easier to handle. There's no chance of theft. There's no chance of miscounting. Because of that, other states have limited the or have reduced the compensation that a vendor can be paid. I agree with that. I think the number should be 15%, not 20% that is currently outlined in the bill. These are just a few of the issues. There are many, many I could go over with. You know, I want to make this brief. I have, as I stated in the beginning, I believe, I mean, I came up here from Alaska, from Colorado. I believe in the charitable gaming model in Alaska. I think it worked really, really well. I hate to see us take a chance and change that. So anyway, that's my testimony. I'll take any questions if anybody wants, but I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lewis. Any questions from committee members? Up next, we'll go to Dave Lambert.
Good afternoon. My name is David Lambert. I'm here to testify from Fairbanks, Alaska. I've been deeply involved in charitable gaming in Alaska for over 35 years, encompassing roles as a permittee, a vendor, and an operator. I hold the distinction of having held a state of Alaska operator license longer than anyone else in the state. Through my operations, I currently contract with over 140 nonprofit organizations, representing 13.5%, over 13.5% of all charitable gaming permits in Alaska. Furthermore, over 12.5% of all charitable gaming proceeds paid to nonprofits last year in the state have come from my efforts. I share this extensive background to emphasize my comprehensive understanding of charitable gaming and its significant impact on nonprofits. I am here to express my support for the proposed legislation. Recognizing that while it may not be perfect, it represents a necessary step forward. As you deliberate, I urge you to prioritize the best interests of Alaska nonprofits. Nonprofits in our state are facing an unprecedented reliance on charitable gaming funding. Historically, of the revenue has been generated through paper poll tab sales. However, the demographics that traditionally purchase these paper poll tabs is aging. We are seeing significant decline in sales. From 2023 to 2024, our paper pull tab sales as an operator decreased by 19%. The self-directed nonprofits with their own pull tab stores, including fraternals, experienced a steeper decline of over 30% in the same period. Traditionally, many of these self-directed nonprofit stores have been forced to close due to economic uncertainty. Consider that a dollar pull tab cost $1 35 years ago, and it remains $1 today. In contrast, operator costs have risen sharply. The cost of paper pull tabs increase from less than a penny a piece to over 6 cents during the same time frame. Wages have more than tripled since 1990. The rents have more than doubled. The rising costs indicate that paper pull tabs are likely to become obsolete due to economic pressure alone. Therefore, a price percentage to be implemented on electric pull tabs, a similar price must be applied to paper pull tabs to ensure fairness. For instance, our AMVETS games, once facing a game cost and state tax, is about 30% of ideal net. Just a few years ago, the same AMVETS game was only 18% of ideal net. That's a 100% increase. In our North Pole store, we have an additional 5.5% sales tax that further erodes proceeds, leaving insufficient funds for operating costs. Drawing on my experience as a primary member in charge of charitable gaming permits for the Alaska Dog Mushers and the Fairbanks Junior Dog Mushers in the early 90s, I understand the operational dynamics involved when a permittee uses various vendor locations and charitable gaming operators. Having transformed into an operator 26 years ago, I have been actively involved in legislation and regulatory changes throughout the years. It is critical to recognize the necessity of modernizing the charitable gaming industry. The fundamental question before you are whether this legislation will primarily protect the nonprofits and ensure their continued success for critical funding, or if it will be disappropriately benefit pull tab distributors and large bingo halls. Distributors appear to be advocating for tablets exclusively, a strategy that statistics from other states suggest is an insufficient reduction in paper pull tab sales. Without a cap on the price of paper pull tabs, our current pricing trends will render them obsolete regardless. Representatives of the large bingo halls are also lobbying for tablets only, seemingly to eliminate competition from fraternals and self-directed nonprofits, and to integrate pull tab play seamlessly with their existing electronic pull tabs offerings. This approach is not in the best interest of nonprofits who depend heavily on charitable gaming revenue. There should be no restrictions on the type of electronic pull tabs units permitted. They all serve the same fundamental purpose. The only difference lies in the size of the screen. As the cutting edge.
Dave, we may have lost connection there. Mr. Powers, Mr. Lambert, can you hear us? We lost connection with Mr. Lambert. So, Mr. Lambert, if you can hear us, if you could just call back in, we'll pick you up right where you left off shortly. We'll go next.
Okay, oh, I'm back.
All right. Okay.
All right. I don't know what happened there.
You were picking up talking about cabinets versus tablets.
Okay. We utilize various screen sizes in our daily activity. Phone, laptops, desktop computers, all serving similar functions. The proposed limitation to tablets only should be removed. The passage of this legislation is vital for nonprofits. I would strongly prefer to see this legislation move out of committee for further consideration, allowing for necessary corrections along the way rather than risking delays. Please remember your primary responsibility is to protect funding source for the nonprofits, not solely the interests of pull tab distributors and large bingo halls. Furthermore, the legislation includes updated language that aims to modernize the and clarify charitable gaming laws for 1925. In 1990, all operations were paper-based, where current state reporting requires online submission. Existing legislation contract submissions via existing legislation requires contract submissions via certified mail is now impractical, and the department no longer possesses certified mail in a meaningful way. With all systems moving towards electronic processing, it is time to move forward and permit e-tabs without arbitrary restrictions on screen size. If you believe such restrictions are justified, I challenge you to limit your staff to tablets only, discarding any larger monitors. A second critical issue within the legislation, perhaps more appropriately addressed by the Finance Committee, concerns the lack of accountability this legislation would create for vendors. The current system requires vendors to pay for all paper pull tabs up front. Because nonprofits are paid up front, vendors are not required to submit state reports, have an operating bond, nor are they required to have a CPA review. This established practice ensures financial responsibility and should be maintained for electronic pull tabs. However, proposed legislation eliminates upfront costs for vendors, grants them access to unlimited pull tabs, allows them to remit payment to nonprofits at their discretion with no clear timelines and safeguards. In contrast, operators are currently required to maintain a bond, purchase pull tabs up front, provide monthly reports to the nonprofits, submit extensive quarterly reports to the Department of Revenue Charitable Gaming Division, and undergo an annual CPA review. Of the proposed legislation that alters this relationship between vendors and permittees should be removed, maintaining the same requirement for electronic pull tabs as currently in place for paper pull tabs. As currently drafted, this aspect of the legislation is not workable. While some manufacturers suggest these issues can be resolved through regulation after passage, there is no clear understanding of how a workable system would be implemented. The current language essentially proposes giving bars unlimited access to electronic pull tabs at no upfront costs, that the hopes that the nonprofits will eventually be paid, even without a system to track what they are owed for the state to ensure accountability through mandatory reporting. Most bar owners lack the accounting experience to manage charitable gaming finances efficiently. Requiring vendors to pay for games up front, as is current practice, would eliminate this need and complex and potentially flawed system. If this provision provides a minimum requirement, should include mandatory, monthly, and quarterly reports, and an annual CPA review, and mandatory suspension of the liquor license for non-compliance. As mentioned, this matter likely warrants more detailed discussion within the Finance Committee. Charitable gaming in Alaska was established with the primary goal of benefiting nonprofits. Please remember this guiding principle should remain central to any updated legislation, ensuring continued funding for these vital organizations. With many other funding sources diminishing, I am receiving numerous daily inquiries from nonprofits seeking assistance with their operating charitable gaming permits. The existing laws can be complex, and we must avoid making decisions that would limit their fundraising capability based on the preference of a few. The proposed legislation to tablets only is likely the most controversial aspect of this legislation. Unless sufficient changes are made, I would still urge you to move the legislation out of committee as the nonprofits are in urgent need of an updated framework. I welcome any questions you may have. With a sense of longstanding experience in charitable gaming industry, I am confident I can provide you with a reasonable recommendation. At this time, I would like to hear from you about any concerns that you have with this legislation so they can be addressed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lambert. Any questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, we'll go now to Sandy Powers.
Hear me?
We can, ma'am.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, good. I mostly agree with Jerry Lewis on many of the points. And Senator Bjorkman, I want to thank you for your work on this bill and the input that you've thought to help work through some of the challenges with this legislation. But I do agree with Jerry Lewis that I have a 35% going to the distributor/manufacturer is problematic. I don't believe that they should ever have more than the 30% that the charities get. So like he said, we agreed on 27% of the net proceeds plus the 3% tax to the state of Alaska. I disagree
Powers,
with Dave
Ms.
Lambert.
Ms. Powers, Ms. Powers, could you just state your name for the record, please? Sorry to interrupt.
What happened? I got muted?
No. I just need you to state your name for the record, ma'am.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Sandy Powers. I'm with Big Valley Bingo, and I'm also representing John Powers from Tudor Bingo. Okay.
Very well.
And sorry about that. I strongly disagree with Dave Lambert that we should have cabinets in Alaska. They're big slot machine looking things. And this legislation was primarily based off of the Minnesota model, which they've had tablets only, and the electronics are very successful there. Their cap for the distributor is 25%, and they're all doing very, very well. And so just because of the location of Alaska, we said, okay, we'd go up as high as 27%, plus they pay the 3% tax to the state. There's some other wording that that I have submitted to you on some of the other issues. And then I have the concern about the deleting that one section, 49, deleting section C, that states that a permittee may not contract with more than one operator at a time to do the same type of activity. If that section was deleted, it would be impossible for me to know what another operator would be doing. I believe it was intended to perhaps delete section B, which was reworded someplace else. But that kind of thing is really problematic. I do believe there has to be a strict limit on locations that serve alcohol to give the other places that are pull tab stores that don't serve alcohol an area to compete. They're the most vulnerable, I believe, of all the gaming types, and we have a lot of standalone pull tab stores. So if the locations that serve alcohol are limited and then the other locations aren't as strictly limited, I believe that gives them a way to compete and stay relevant. I will submit my other suggestions for cleaning up the language in other areas, and I really thank you for your time and effort in this matter, and I'd be happy to take questions if there are any.
Thank you very much, Ms. Powers. Are there any questions from committee members?
Nope.
Seeing none, thanks again. We'll go now.
Thank you.
We'll go now to Ms. Mary Magnuson.
Fear not, it's not a PowerPoint, it's just my notes.
Oh, we love a good PowerPoint here at Senate Labor and Commerce. Welcome. Glad you're here. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Mary Magnuson. I'm the Vice President of Government Affairs for Arrow International. And I want to thank you for allowing me to testify today, for being part of an invited testimony. I also want to thank you, Senator Bjorkman, for working on this bill, for spending the time that you have and meeting with the stakeholders. And I know it's sometimes kind of like herding cats to try to get everybody on the same page, and it's a very difficult thing to do. So thank you for all your efforts on behalf here. I don't want to repeat a lot of what the other groups have said along. I want to point out that Arrow is a company that has been in existence for about almost 60 years now, serving only the charitable gaming industry. We don't do any other gaming business, gaming works. We're not in the casino business, the tribal business, or others. We work only with charities, and our business succeeds only if the charities succeed. Having said that, we've been talking now for the last 3 years or so about electronic pull tabs, and you've heard me more often than you probably care to talk about the benefits that electronic pull tabs could provide to Alaska charities. We bring that to you from experience in other states. There are now 12 states that have electronic pull tabs operating in their states, Indiana being one that simply introduced legislation that was signed into law by the governor about 2 weeks ago. And all of those states have benefited greatly from the introduction of electronic pull tabs, particularly the charities. They have gone from struggling, from seeing declined revenues, to seeing increased revenues, increased sustainability for their organizations, particularly veterans and fraternal clubs, as well as increased revenues that they can spend within their communities on a lot of the causes that they support. So there is no person or company that has worked harder in the state of Alaska over the last several years to try to bring the issue of electronic pull tabs forward. So we're grateful that you have this bill and that it's under consideration. That said, we do have a significant problem with the bill. And that problem rests on page 10, lines 19 through 26. And that is the provision that says a manufacturer may not be licensed in the state of Alaska if that manufacturer or affiliate or family member within 2 degrees of, I'm sorry, Senator Dunbar, consanguinity holds an interest in the distributor. That is a problem for us for a number of reasons. As you heard from Mr. Borcherding and Ms. Yang, Arrow purchased the assets of the Whaler almost 2 years ago now, in 2023. We purchased those assets because the former owner, Ray Hewitt, wanted to retire. And Ray looked for somebody who could, had the financial wherewithal and the interest in making an investment in the state of Alaska. And by investing in the state of Alaska, that meant helping the company grow, taking care of its employees, making sure that it thrived within this environment, and being a good competitor within this environment. Arrow is not attempting to create a monopoly, as we have been accused of. We are not trying to take over charity gaming in Alaska, nor are we trying to take over charity gaming in the world. We own distributors throughout the country. We always have. There have been no adverse effects to a charity gaming market in any single state by virtue of Arrow or any other manufacturer owning a distributor. It simply makes for a smoother, better distribution chain for the manufacturer. It helps the distributors who now have more resources and abilities to operate. What Mr. Borcherding didn't tell you is that now that the Whaler is owned by Arrow, you might think that they would be limited to Whaler product or Arrow product. They're not. They buy from other manufacturers. Arrow does not stop that. All of our distributors buy from other manufacturers. We want those distributors to be successful and to generate as much revenue as possible for the charities within the states they operate. So the problem we're having here with this legislation is I think a lot of misinformation has been communicated about Arrow, a lot of misinformation, and if I were to be honest, outright falsehoods about Arrow's operations and their business practices in other states that has perhaps led this particular provision to come into being. I'm happy to talk to any of you privately about this more, but I think with this provision in place, it's not possible for us to support this bill as it moves, if it were to move forward. You've already heard the effects on the whaler. Arrow spent a substantial sum of money purchasing the whaler. This bill would require us, if Arrow chooses to continue to do business in Alaska, to divest of the whaler. We don't have anyone to sell the company to. We're talking multiple millions of dollars here. There are not easy buyers out there for that sort of thing. And you don't just give a company away once you've made an investment in it. We've operated now for almost 2 years. Horrible things have not happened. Prices have not gone up. Other companies have not gone out of business. Nothing bad has occurred from this acquisition. Nothing bad will occur from this acquisition. Business will continue to go on, and the whaler will continue to operate, and the whaler will continue to thrive with Steve, hopefully, at the helm, continuing to operate with Alaskans in the business. But let me tell you another reason why this bill might not be good policy. When this draft came out, we ended up having to consult with legal counsel. We consulted with Holland & Hart, a law firm in Anchorage, and more specifically, former Attorney General Mike Garrity. We asked them independently to please take a look at this provision and asked them to tell us if it was constitutional. And they responded with a memo, which I think you all received today, that it is not. This provision violates both the United States and the Alaska Constitution in two respects. Number one, it singles out Arrow for special treatment. And that's a violation of the Equal Protection Clause in both constitutions. It is also a violation of what is called it's a taking. In other words, it's a Fifth Amendment violation by government taking a private business without just compensation. Now, you can resolve that by paying Arrow for the value of its investment, and the government can go forward and take. But that would be a very sizable amount of money that would have to be paid. Look, the fact of the matter is for 38 years, there has been a provision in Alaska law that says a manufacturer may also be a distributor. 38 years. And there's been one company, as all, that has held both licenses. It was a small company, I will admit, but one company, and it is no longer doing business. But that was allowed. But now, when Arrow comes in to the state, invests in a business, betters the employees, betters the business environment, all of a sudden there's a problem, apparently, that has to be prohibited by legislation. Not only is that not fair to Arrow, it's not fair to the employees of the whaler and the whaler, but I would suggest that it's probably not good policy either, because what it says to the rest of the world is, sure, come to Alaska, invest in our companies, but beware. In a short period of time, we may take that investment away from you. Can't guarantee it. So I would ask that you look at this provision very carefully, and I think there are two ways you could remedy this bill. One, you could take the provision out entirely, which would solve the constitutional problems as well as the fairness problems. Or two, you could make this provision prospective, which means it only comes into place when the bill becomes effective. Now, in theory, that's going to prohibit any other manufacturers from buying distributors, but at least it would protect Arrow's investment that it's already made in Alaska so that you wouldn't run afoul of both the United States and the Alaska constitutions. So I would love to talk to you about this further if you are interested. I'd happy to answer any questions that you might have now or schedule meetings to talk to you at a further date if you have an interest in doing so. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Magnuson. Are there questions from committee members? I have a couple.
Sure.
Are there other states that don't allow manufacturers to own distributors?
Two. Minnesota, where I live, and North Dakota. And I have to talk about that, though, because just this past year in North Dakota, at the suggestion of the Attorney General's Office, which is the regulator, there was a bill introduced to eliminate the distributors from the process, particularly with respect to electronic pull tabs. In Minnesota, if you ask the regulator, they will tell you they see no purpose in having the distributors even involved in the distribution of electronic product. Now, paper products a little different because manufacturers don't have the wherewithal to service each individual charity. But with respect to electronics, there's just a different relationship. But in both of those states, there's been attempts to actually eliminate the distributors and allow the manufacturer and the distributor to essentially be one and the same.
So to follow up, you find value in having provisions that protect distributors that are owned by Alaskans?
There are – no. I'm sorry if that's what if it was confusing. We don't see a problem with having a manufacturer own a distributor. We don't have a problem if the law says that the manufacturer still has to use a distributor, but we do have a problem with a law that says a manufacturer cannot own a distributor. I don't have a problem if this was something that occurred before we purchased the whaler. I mean, the biggest issue here is not so much the policy, which I disagree with anyway, but the biggest problem here is it's after the fact. Arrow's already purchased the company. It already has made a substantial investment. And now what this particular piece of legislation does is it takes that away. It will force that to be it would force Arrow to divest itself if it chooses to continue to do business in Alaska.
Understood. I have one more, Senator Dunbar. To follow up, my interest in this is maximizing value for charities and protecting Alaskan businesses and making sure that we have a system that does that. What I understood your previous answer to my question about to mean is that if some feel that distributors don't need to be involved in the process, it might occur to some that they need some protection and some foundation within the law for them to exist as an entity that serves as a liaison between a manufacturer and a nonprofit or a charity so that they can maximize their benefit. If you don't see it that way, that's understandable as a manufacturer, and if you just like to sideline distributors, I understand that point, if they don't need protection. But I think we've run smack into the issue of the tension that exists between manufacturers from outside and Alaska-based businesses that distribute the product here in our state. We heard from your employee twice, he mentioned that prior to the purchase of the Whaler Casino Supply, that companies refused to sell to his business in order for him to conduct operations. We'll hear more in future hearings about that specific issue and why that may or may not happen, I'm sure. But this is the tension and why the provision of that bill exists that you outlined. I think there is some value, and we'll have some discussion here about regulating charitable gaming that has a model and a structure that represents how alcohol is regulated, separating manufacturers from distributors to protect from monopolistic environments in which people are forced to make choices that are uneconomic for them. And I'm happy to explore that more, happy to do that more. I understand that your company has an investment in the Whaler, but I also understand that there may be value in facilitating an artful solution so that we can make sure Alaska interests are protected. Senator Dunbar has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not a question, a statement. And this is not the fault of the testifier, but there are other discussions happening in other committees, and this idea of businesses having equal protection rights has continued to come up. And I just want to state for the record, this does not implicate the provisions, the equal protection provisions of our state or our federal constitution. This is rational basis review. This is clearly, within commerce that we are regulating. And as you alluded to, there are other industries where we prevent vertical integration. the most prominent probably in Alaska is the cannabis industry, where there are a variety of protections on who can own what for what reason to prevent monopolistic or oligopolistic behavior. So I didn't write this provision. And to be honest, I didn't know that the Whaler was purchased by, until it was brought today by Arrow. I'm sure it's been mentioned in testimony before, but it has no bearing on the work that we're doing here in my mind. And so again, it's a broader discussion than what we're having today, but we have as a state broad authority to regulate commerce, particularly when it impacts sort of sensitive areas like alcohol, gaming, cannabis. And so there is no equal protection concern here. That doesn't mean it's good policy. Doesn't mean I'll support it. Doesn't mean I don't want to see this removed. I just want to be clear that I feel like that term is being overused by some members in this body, and it is a misreading of the law. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Can I respond to that?
You may.
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, I think in looking at the memo that was drafted by Holland and Hart, the equal protection argument isn't that the government doesn't have the ability to regulate and use as use the rational basis test in order to justify that provision. I think the argument is that when a law is obviously focused on an individual company for special treatment, that law has a higher level of scrutiny and needs to be looked at on a higher level of scrutiny, particularly in a case where there's already been investment that will be taken as a result. And then, Senator Bjorkman, with respect to your comments, I understand where you're going with that, but I don't know that there we're necessarily talking apples to apples here. Our concern is not about – we're not trying to take distributors out of business. And for reasons of bringing up North Dakota and Minnesota, those are not intentions that anyone has here. We don't want to take distributors out of business. We're not intending to take distributors out of business. There's a place for distributors in this industry. And there's an Arrow has always been very supportive of distributors. We don't have a problem with selling our products through distributors. We have a problem with buying a distributor and now being told that we have to divest ourselves of that distributor at great economic harm to the company. That's the ultimate problem. If there's a way to solve this problem, I'm more than happy to look at it. But the fact of the matter is, as written, we stand as Arrow in an untenable position. We have to walk away from Alaska, or we have to divest ourselves of the Whaler, and that means that you're going to have less competition in Alaska because you're going to have one less company participating in the market. So we're not going to enhance competition. We're not going to prevent a monopoly. As a practical matter, what's going to happen is you're going to see less competition because now rather than having three distributors in Alaska, you're only going to have two.
Senator Gray Jackson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've heard testimony from several folks this afternoon that had concerns about different parts of the bill. So my question to you is this your only concern in this bill?
Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson. We have other concerns with the bill. This clearly is the primary one. This is one of those that, you know, we simply can't support. The other provisions are things that we would prefer to see changed. For example, the provision about requiring sales to all distributors that doesn't have an exclusion for exclusive games that the distributors have worked on very hard, as Mr. Borchardine talked about. We have a concern with the tablet only, as Mr. Lambert said. We think that the charities should be able to choose, and we've heard from many, many charities out there, particularly veteran fraternal groups that are not necessarily public-facing, that they want the opportunity to choose which device they have, and they do not want to be limited to tablets. So those are really the issues. There are some very good things in this bill, and by and large, it goes in many of the right directions, but there are some things that I think could benefit from improvement.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. Does Arrow have a position on the cap of on ideal net as payable to manufacturers? In the bill, it's currently set at 35%. We had testimony today that wanted that cap moved down. Do you have a feeling on that?
Mr. Chair, you know, that's really a policy decision for you to make. We can live with 35%. The issue, I think, here is where the tax comes in. The way the bill is drafted, it defines adjusted gross receipts basically as, including the taxes. So there's always going to be that 3% baked into it here. So if it drops to 30%, we're really talking about 27% because we still have to – the distributor is still going to have to collect – the state tax, and then there are the local taxes that come into effect. I'm not entirely sure yet how those are actually reflected. So I tend to agree that, you know, we can be negotiable on those kinds of numbers, but we have to take into consideration that there's always going to be 3% that the state's going to take on top of it. I know there was mention of Minnesota, and, you know, I've been working in the gaming industry in Minnesota for 35 years. Minnesota recently moved to a 25% cap, and I'll explain why. First of all, electronic pull tabs have been in the market in Minnesota for 13 years. The hardest part of recouping investment here is when you put electronics into the market, you provide all the equipment up front. You provide all the computers, all the tablets, all the technology, all the games, and that's a substantial financial investment. And over time, you recoup that hardware and software investment. Now, after 13 years, people have probably recouped most of their initial investment, so it's a little bit easier to go to 25%. It's a lot more difficult to do that at the beginning when everybody's – all the manufacturers, distributors are going to have to invest a substantial amount of money in order to get the product out here and to do that in a way where the charities don't pay a dime to get started. It all falls on the shoulders of the manufacturers and distributors to the benefit of the charities. So they're getting full proceeds going forward. Now, after 12 years or 13 years, yeah, you could probably drop that down. But initially, I think you have to be mindful of the investment that gets put in. The other thing I will say is that 25% happened because the charities in Minnesota pay a substantial amount of money in taxes. They pay far more than they do in Alaska, and they've been looking for tax relief. And one of the things the legislature did, it was just 2 years ago, was say, well, we're not going to give you tax relief, but we're just going to cap the manufacturers. So you get to keep an additional, you know, few percentage points. So it was a way to avoid essentially reducing the taxes by just taking it out of the profits of the, or the, you know, taking it away from the manufacturers.
Thank you. I have one final question, then we'll wrap up. There's been quite a bit of conversation that we've had around how vendors, bars, are responsible for executing electronic pull tabs within their establishment. Could you talk to us a little bit about how the flow of money works? How do bars in Minnesota, how do they receive electronic pull tabs? How do they collect money for them? And then on what kind of timeline do they give that money back to charities?
Mr. Chair, the states where we have pull tabs in bars in Minnesota and North Dakota are primarily the states. So in both states, the charities are essentially responsible for the games. The games are conducted and operated, as a practical matter, by the bars, by the vendors. But the charities hold the responsibility for keeping track of the money and for filing the reports and doing what needs to be done. And that's very similar to the way it works in Alaska, which is why the bars get 30% as opposed to in an operator situation who does everything, 70%. So in Minnesota, for example, the charity will give the bar the starting bank to operate the games. The bar will be responsible for that money. The bar will use that to take in payments for tickets, essentially, or electronic plays, and they'll use that to pay the prizes. And at the end of the day, the charity is able, on the electronic side, to run the numbers and see exactly how much should have been taken in and how much should have been paid out. And since they know what they started with, because they provided the bank, they know exactly what should be in the till. So with electronics, it makes it a lot easier if the bars manage the money than with the paper, because you have this electronic tracking mechanism that the charity has access to 24/7. They will have a portal, much like the State Department of Revenue would have a portal, so they can go in at any time and look at play, and they can look at what happens on a day-to-day basis. Most states do require that the charity pick up the money within a relatively short period of time. Typically, it's 5 days or less. In Minnesota now, it went from 5 days to 5 days or less, or once you reach $2,000, it has to be picked up. The charity picks up the money. The bars don't distribute or don't deposit it or do anything. They fill out the deposit slip, and they file all the reports. It's very similar the way they do it in North Dakota. North Dakota is a little different because they have cabinets, so they have bill acceptors. So with the bill acceptors, you have the money in the machines under lock and key, and the bars are only paying out the prizes, but they're not taking anything in. So they really have less money in the hands. Whereas in Minnesota, because it's only tablets, you have to have more money on hand because you have to not only give the money to get onto the machine, but you also then have to have the money available to pay. Now, am I going to tell you that there's no theft? No, there is theft. It occurs. We've seen robberies, and we've seen entire machines in North Dakota hauled out the back of the room. But it's not very often, and it happens from time to time. And the nice thing about the electronics is you know exactly what's missing, and you can get to it much faster. If you have an employee theft situation, you know day by day. If you have a robbery or something, you know exactly what should have been there and you know exactly what was taken, and it makes prosecuting something a lot simpler.
Thank you. Yeah, it's good to understand that there is a clear electronic point-of-sale system so that folks know where the money is and what's supposed to be there.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll wrap up today's hearing. I'd just like to make a couple of comments on this bill. It's clear that our charitable nonprofits need assistance from electronic gaming. My goal is to move forward a bill that can have as much support as possible. However, there is very real fear that charitable gaming done on large screens and in cabinets looks a lot like slot machines, looks a lot like gambling. And I've talked to many people that don't support that, that's not a possibility for them to support that. That's why the bill does not include provisions at all for cabinets that look like slot machines that have large screens. We will explore many more of these issues that have been brought forward and concerns. I've tried to craft the bill that's been very responsive to all input so far, and to guide this bill in a place that can be workable based on systems in other states that already work. And to that end, I'm happy to have more conversations and discussions with folks. But there are real fears out there within the industry of monopolistic control over this industry because of the small number of manufacturers that supply things to distributors and because of past experience. And we will we'll deal with a lot of the details and many of the changes that we have already begun to discuss at future hearings and talk through all of these issues as we go. But I think it's important that we get this bill right before it leaves committee and make sure that we have a product that is going to be durable and can work and gain support. So appreciate everyone's time today, and thanks for your indulgence in going a little bit over. There's no further business to come before Senate Labor and Commerce today. We'll meet again on Wednesday, April 30th, when we'll hear Senate Bill 62, Board of Parole, Senate Bill 134, Pharmacy Benefit Managers, Third Party Administration, and Senate Bill 35, Delivery Network Companies. With that, we are adjourned at 3:09 p.m.